From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. It began with a tweet, hastily deleted. On late Friday night, the general manager of the Houston Rockets shared an image supporting protesters in Hong Kong. Within hours, the Chinese government expressed its extreme displeasure. Then the NBA genuflected. Then they got blowback for genuflecting. And then NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said he would protect employees' rights to freedom of expression. But China canceled broadcasting a pair of games in its billion-dollar market anyway. Truth is, American companies and organizations have long been making adjustments to how they do business in order to keep doing business in China. But here we have the fastest, most public demonstration of China's economic power translating into political leverage that put even sports' most progressive organization back on its heels. So this hour on Point, the NBA and the true cost of doing business with China. And you can join us. Are you a basketball fan? What do you think of how the NBA has handled the interaction between China, between the Houston Rockets, over one tweet? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, we will begin today with Jeff Zelgett. He is the NBA reporter for USA Today Sports. He's been on the beat for more than a decade, and he joins us now from Washington. Jeff, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna.
Okay, so first of all, I want to start with the latest in what NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has said about this, because yesterday he addressed the controversy, and here's what he said regarding the NBA and free speech.
Essentially, what I've said in that statement is the long-held values of the NBA are to support freedom of expression, and certainly freedom of expression by members of the NBA community. And in this case, Daryl Morey, as the general manager of the Houston Rockets, enjoys that right as one of our employees.
That's NBA Commissioner Adam Silver just yesterday. Jeff, does Daryl Morey feel like he enjoys that right with the NBA?
No, he probably doesn't feel that right now, but ultimately he will feel that way. This was the statement that Adam Silver needed to make. He was very clear about it. There was no ambiguity. And I thought the NBA's initial statement that you mentioned earlier, where they were genuflecting, it was sloppy at best, and they were trying to thread a needle, and they didn't exactly do it. And it is difficult, as you had mentioned, doing business with China in China, comes with a certain set of issues. And the NBA probably expected this at some point. When you are going to be a global company, you are going to encounter sovereign nations that don't align with your political and sometimes social values. And so the NBA probably expected this at some point. I don't think they thought it was going to happen this week, but here they are. And then Adam Silver, obviously, with his statement, was the one that needed to be made. And he also, in saying that, he understands there's a financial consequence to this, and he's willing to accept those consequences to support the values of the NBA, United States, and democracy.
Is he really? Here's also what he said in that same press conference there. It seems like he's using language that says he's trying to find a middle ground with China.
It's my hope that when I'm in Shanghai, I can meet with the appropriate officials and discuss where we stand. And again, put those remarks from Daryl Morey and my remarks in an appropriate context of a many decades long relationship, and see if we can find mutual respect for each other's political systems and beliefs.
So Jeff, China though responded by saying, CCTV, the state broadcaster, responded by saying, it doesn't matter, we're not airing those games in China anyway, so sorry 800 million Chinese basketball fans. And then, quote, CCTV is strongly dissatisfied and opposed Silver's claim to support the right of free expression. We believe that any speech that challenges national sovereignty and social stability is not within the scope of freedom of speech here. So it sounds like China's saying there's no middle ground, NBA.
And that's how China does business very often. Their negotiating tactics are often hard-handed in one way. And that's why, again, you mentioned it, Adam Silver is trying to thread that needle and find some kind of middle ground. Because at the end of the day, and this is his difficult position here, while he understands there could be some financial loss here, he also understands he has a responsibility to his shareholders, which are not only owners of NBA teams, but players as well, because they share in mm-hmm. basketball-related income, a 50-50 split, and revenue from China goes into that pool. And so he's trying to protect that as best he can, you know, while understanding he is in a very, very difficult position. And he's not the only company, he's not the only head of a company recently who has had to encounter Chinese tactics.
So many questions to ask you, Jeff, because this happened to the NBA in particular is really fascinating to me, right? Because here is the league in the United States that prides itself on its progressive values. It stands behind players when they want to protest police violence, for example, in the United States. And but then right there, on the other hand, even though while they're saying they're protecting the freedom of expression for employees and general managers, there's still this kind of like, but maybe we shouldn't be offending the biggest market outside the United States.
And I think, Adam, and I do agree with you about being the most progressive of the North American sports leagues, without a doubt. But there are also a couple instances, you know, Adam Silver, at the height of the Colin Kaepernick kneeling during the national anthem in protest, not against the national anthem, but Adam Silver managed to keep that issue with players having a physical demonstration during the national anthem. That didn't happen in the NBA. He made sure that didn't happen. Also with the Eric Garner situation and players wearing the I Can't Breathe t-shirts, that lasted just a couple of days. He allowed it, but his statement also included the phrase, I prefer that players stick to the, you know, NBA's approved pregame attire. And so that lasted a couple of days. So he does a nice job of finessing some of this and, you know, allowing players to speak out on issues, but also keeping it out of the huge, huge public eye and essentially keeping his sponsors in mind as he does things.
Until now, right?
I mean, right.
When the Chinese government quickly and publicly slaps down someone in the NBA, you cannot keep that out of the public eye. But Jeff, let me ask you, let's take a step back here.
Yeah.
How important is the Chinese market to the NBA? Yeah.
It's huge. And this relationship goes back 30 plus years when the NBA first started sending CCTV videotape of their games to show on air in China for free. The NBA was not charging money. They were just looking to grow the game at a very grassroots level. And so they were sending games for the Chinese population to watch. And also, the popularity of basketball in China predates the NBA. Christian missionaries went to China in the late 1800s, shortly after Dr. James Naismith invented the game and introduced Chinese population to the game. So it's been there for a while. There are approximately, you had mentioned the number of fans. I think the latest from the Chinese Basketball Association is that 300 million Chinese play basketball to a certain degree, whether, you know, it's competitive or whether it's recreational or at a high level or low level. They get millions and millions of fans watching the games, either streaming online on their phones. The technological advances of the past, you know, 15 years, but certainly the past 5 years, where you can now watch games so much easier on your phone, has made a difference. And the NBA in March opened up the world's second largest NBA store outside of North America in Beijing at a mall. The rise of, you know, expendable income in the nation has helped fuel the NBA's rise as well. So it is a hugely popular sport. The NBA recognized that this was possible, you know, 3.5 decades ago, and they've done a great job of building relationships there and making sure that, you know, if it's not the most popular sport in the country, it's one of the most popular sports in the country that can also generate revenue.
Well, and I'm looking here to one of those revenue streams that the NBA has some licensing deals in China, a $500 million agreement with Tencent Holdings, 30-plus year partnership with CCTV, the state-run broadcaster there. So it's huge. It's a huge market historically in the present day, Jeff, as you're saying. I'm curious, just to get sort of down in the weeds with basketball, how much difference did it make that this happened with the Houston Rockets GM? And I'm asking because, of course, Yao Ming played for the Rockets, incredibly beloved in China. Do you think that kind of tipped this over into being even more high profile than it might have otherwise been?
It certainly did. Because of Yao Ming, the Houston Rockets have been one of the most popular NBA teams in China for over a decade now, since the Rockets drafted him. Now, Yao has been retired for some time now, but he's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He is the commissioner or president of the Chinese Basketball Association. So he obviously has deep ties in China. He also has deep ties here with not only the Houston Rockets, but the NBA, Adam Silver. They've worked together on a variety of issues. And then there is a significant, you know, Chinese population in the Houston metropolitan area. They have a consulate in Houston as well. And so that plays a huge role in it. Now, so far, outside of the Chinese Basketball Association distancing themselves from the NBA's comments, we have not heard from Yao. My understanding is that Adam Silver was going to meet with Yao when he reached Shanghai. They just left Tokyo. I believe they're in Shanghai right now. And so he wanted to meet with him and other leaders and across businesses in China. And then, Magna, you were talking about the financial implications. It's not $4 billion a year by any stretch of the imagination, but my reporting has turned up that the NBA has about $4 billion tied up with sponsorship deals over the course of, you know, 5-6 years with Chinese companies.
Wow. Well, Jeff Zilgit, stand by here for just a moment. Jeff is the NBA reporter for USA Today Sports, and we are talking about the NBA and China. And now, not just the economic, but perhaps the political cost of doing business with China. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the NBA and China and the cost of doing business with the massive market that China represents. I'm joined today by Jeff Zilgit. He's NBA reporter for USA Today Sports. And Jeff, before the break, you were talking about the fact that this happened regarding a tweet that the GM for the Houston Rockets that he sent out that made it particularly a high-profile case in China because of how much the Chinese love Yao Ming and the Rockets. And you mentioned that there's a consulate, a Chinese consulate in Houston. And I just wanted to read to you a statement that the consulate general put out here, okay, after Morey put out his tweet. It said, quote, "We are deeply shocked by the erroneous comments on Hong Kong made by Mr. Daryl Morey. We have lodged representations and expressed strong dissatisfaction with the Houston Rockets and urged the latter to correct the error and take immediate, concrete measures to eliminate the adverse impact." So, Jeff, it makes me wonder what the near future is going to be in the relationship between Morey and the Rockets.
Daryl Morey's job is safe for right now. And to get to the heart of what they want, in talking to my sources in China, they want Daryl Morey fired. That's the bottom line. That would go a long way in resolving this. It would show to Chinese that the NBA doesn't stand for this, and they're on our side, and they're going to fire the guy who started this. That's not going to happen, at least as of right now. Although the Houston Rockets owner, Tillman Fertitta, came out with a strong rebuke on Twitter of Daryl's comments, he also, in a comment to ESPN, showed strong support for Daryl as the general manager of his team, called him one of the best in the league, said we have the best general manager in the league. And talking to my sources at the, you know, throughout the league, that Daryl's job is safe. But getting to the heart of what that consulate general statement and the some people in China, they certainly want their pound of flesh in the name of Daryl Morey's firing.
It seems like the NBA on multiple fronts is trying to have it both ways here, because on Sunday, that the statement that the NBA issued was actually issued in multiple languages, right? The English language one was, you know, it was kind of mildly worded, noting that the impact of Morey's tweets were regrettable. But then if I understand correctly, the statement from the NBA that was issued in Mandarin was far more critical, right? Saying that, quote, "We are extremely disappointed by the inappropriate remarks made by the Houston Rockets general manager, who has undoubtedly seriously hurt the feelings of our Chinese fans."
Those are – it's an incredible situation when you spell it out like that. You know, I haven't gotten to the bottom of it other than that an NBA spokesperson told me that the English version of their statement is the official statement. So I don't know if something got lost in translation, if someone tinkered with it unbeknownst to the NBA. That statement showed up on – in China, there's a version of Twitter called Weibo. It's a microblogging site similar to Twitter. And that's where that translation of that statement first appeared, on the NBA's Weibo feed. And so I reached out to the NBA. They were adamant that the one in English is the one that stands. But there certainly is enough discrepancy to make you wonder what is going on, if indeed they were trying to have it both ways and make their statement much more harsh in Chinese to try to placate or appease Chinese people, government, and businesses, and hopefully make the situation go away a little bit sooner. Adam Silver noted yesterday, at this point, he doesn't imagine that the situation is going to smooth over anytime soon.
I don't imagine that it will. Let's go to Daryl, who's calling from Hyde Park, Maryland. Daryl, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm actually from Hyde Park, Vermont. I have just a quick statement. I'm not even really much of a huge basketball fan, but I will certainly go out and buy a Rockets jersey just in support of these guys. The fact that we're worried about the NBA's kowtowing over a $4 billion deal over 5 years, switch it over to India. Go to an emerging country that wants to be a democracy and stop supporting these regimes that, you know, lock up a million people, spy on their people, and have, you know, really no real respect for human life. So that's about all I have to say. Well, I would rather support the NBA if they actually have a strong statement and a stance and support people who, and governments, excuse me, not people, but governments who are allowing their people to be free.
Daryl, first of all, let me apologize to Vermonters everywhere for misidentifying your state, but thank you so much for your call, Daryl. Well, I want to turn now to Ray Zhang. She joins us from Washington. She's program associate at the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson Center. And her research focuses on U.S.-China business and cultural relations. Ray, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. So what distinguishes this conflict between the NBA and the Chinese government from other compromises that American businesses have had to make in the recent past in order to do business in China?
Well, like you said, this is not the first time that the Chinese government has enacted pressure on American and foreign governments. There have been pressure put on American hospitality and airline industries, including websites that have listed Hong Kong and Taiwan as potentially separate entities from China, which caused a lot of backlash. I would say what distinguishes the NBA from these past instances is that airlines and hospitality industries don't have vocal, active fan bases and discussion communities.
Right.
So when this became a controversy with the NBA, you had not just the company involved, but also a wider community that started to talk about this topic or omit talking about this topic if it was something that they didn't want to breach.
Hmm. Well, what I wonder, to me, one of the other things that distinguishes this is that for other examples that we can come up with, airlines, you said, hotels who, you know, they have to change maps, for example, that they have on their websites related to their business. I mean, Apple has made compromises as well. But those were all all changes directly related to the business that they were doing in China. Whereas here we have a situation where Morey put out a tweet that wasn't related to basketball. It was a tweet regarding his own sort of political view about something. So that's what feels a little different to me here. Now, here, this is the Chinese government now saying, well, we don't even want you to say that, even though it has nothing to do with basketball. Is that not kind of a new step we're seeing here?
Well, as you discussed earlier, Chinese state media and the consulate essentially responded along the lines of free speech can't cross the line of China's definition of sovereignty. In listening to this as a China specialist, I'm really struck by how similar this response is to the types of pressure that Chinese domestic firms and cultural entities are subject to. So just to put this in context, in China, most athletes are either going to be state-sponsored, so directly funded by the government, or sponsored by corporations that are accountable to the CCP, including essentially all of the major sportswear and food beverage industries that are boycotting the NBA right now. They've done so at a really rapid pace, but what this really reflects is that when doing business with the Chinese government or corporations that are accountable to the CCP, the net of what constitutes acceptable conduct extends beyond the primary functions of one's business.
Right. So, but isn't that troubling somewhat? I feel a little troubled by that.
Well, this is for a very long time, businesses have essentially understood that working in China has necessitated complying with China's laws and regulations to work. But within China's domestic space, the definition of what exactly compliance means has changed. And as I just stated, this is something that's actually hitting a lot of domestic firms first.
Okay. Well, Ray, stand by, and Jeff, stand by here for just a second, because I want to bring in one more voice into the conversation. Brian Yang joins us from Los Angeles. He's producer of Linsanity, a documentary about Chinese-American NBA player Jeremy Lin. Brian's also co-founder of 408 Films, an independent film production company. Brian Yang, welcome to On Point.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you. I understand that you also produced or have been involved with various other TV shows, including a Chinese TV show called Shanghai Rush. So you've done business in China, is that right?
Yeah, for about the last decade or so. I'm what's known as an ABC, an American-born Chinese. I've gone back to China and gotten involved in the entertainment space there in both film and television.
Mm. Well, I can understand that, you know, sitting here in the United States, it is fairly it's fairly easy to draw these sort of bright lines regarding free speech and politically protected speech and a bright line between that and doing business. I wonder if you think, Brian, that that's sort of too elementary a way of looking at this, that there are subtleties regarding China that we ought to be acknowledging.
Yeah, you know, after spending so much time there, and especially around the game of basketball, I've actually done produced another film out there about Stephon Marbury, who's a former NBA player who went to go play in the CBA. And as we, or many of us now know, Jeremy has also moved leagues over to the CBA. There certainly are considerations to be had, I think, when you're looking at it from the outside in or inside out, whichever point of view it is. There are nuances to the situation that, you know, when you're reading headlines from the West through social media or what have you, understandably will react a certain way, and don't hold that against them. But I think on the other side of the pond, it's the same thing. You know, they have a very they have a history, and Joseph Tsai, you know, I don't know if it's been talked about on this show, who's the GM of the Brooklyn Nets, I think sort of outlined it very intelligently in a long post the other day of why China has taken this, you know, position. And it's something to consider, I think, when you're looking at the entire picture as opposed to just sort of reacting to to a 140 character thought, you know. So I think it's important to look at it from a 360-degree point of view.
Yeah, and you mentioned Joseph Tsai's, like you said, with owner of the Nets, right, and was number two at Alibaba, right? So a huge, like, very wealthy and influential man. So what is the argument he made? I think he was talking about how you have to look at more than a century of history here regarding China's view on Hong Kong.
That's right. Yeah, he gave a little history lesson as far as, like, why it is that China feels this way. And it's a very complex issue. I don't think there's necessarily a right or a wrong. It really depends on where you sit. And in regards to the NBA, I think, yes, there's certainly a large amount of money at play here, but it's also important to look at the fact that they have spent the better part of at least, you know, the last three decades having planted a flag there, developed and cultivated the game relationships, and really invested into the country. And so it's a very deep rooted relationship that they've grown. And so this unfortunate misstep, I think, we're in a time and place where the division and polarization being extra woke is unfortunately doing harm. But looking back again at the scope and the history of both from a political standpoint and a business standpoint of what the country and the NBA itself has gone through over the last 30 to 100 years, I think that's just something that needs to be underscored. And, you know, I think communicated to anyone who's looking at this issue from, again, a broader perspective.
Brian, before we let you go, I just want one more question here, because your phone line was a little tough to hear, and I want to be sure I heard correctly something that you said. Did you say that some of the consequences of being extra woke, i.e. the NBA, ended up doing some harm here? Did you say that?
Well, I think, you know, my point to that is that oftentimes the NBA in the past has been just looked at as an entertainment product, right? People treat the game and the players as these larger-than-life characters, which they certainly are. But now, I think in the last 10 years, as players and owners have spoken up and the league is used as a platform to express their political views, which I think is a good thing, this issue coming into light during this period has, I think, created this situation, whereas I'm not sure in the past it would have been as pronounced. So I think it's just my point to that is simply looking at all the different touch points in context of the here, the now, and so that's
I hear what you're saying. Brian Yang, we got to let you go, but Brian Yang, producer of Linsanity, a documentary about Chinese-American NBA player Jeremy Lin, and co-founder of 408 Films, speaking to us from Los Angeles. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mena.
Ray Zhang, let me turn back to you here, because when Brian said that, he seemed to be implying that some of the values purportedly that the NBA has, progressive values, may simply just be coming into conflict with the requirements of doing business in China. That's not necessarily new either. I'm thinking of, for example, Apple, right, who talks a big a big game about privacy in the United States here, but has willingly given up certain aspects around privacy in order to do business in the Chinese market, hasn't it?
Yes. Apple, the biggest move that Apple made that caused a stir amongst China analyst circles was its decision recently to allow iCloud data to be stored domestically within China. And in doing so, it partnered with a corporation that essentially had to follow Chinese cybersecurity laws, which meant that should Chinese authorities have a reason that they designate to search iCloud data, they could have gotten into China-based iCloud data. Apple has also come under a lot of criticism for removals of app from its Chinese app store that has followed Chinese government preferences.
Well, Ray Zhang, stand by for a moment. And Jeff Zilgit, you've been really patient here. I haven't forgotten about you. Jeff is the NBA reporter for USA Today Sports, and we are talking about the NBA and China and the compromises that businesses make, organizations make, when they want to do business in China. We will be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the NBA and the cost of doing business in China. I'm joined today by Ray Zhang. She's program associate at the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson Center. Jeff Zilgit also joins us. He's NBA reporter for USA Today Sport. Now, on Monday, Houston Rockets star James Harden said he was actually sorry about the controversy caused by Rockets GM Daryl Morey's tweet. Here's what he said.
Yeah, we apologize. You know, we love China. We love, you know, playing there. I know for both of us individually, we go there, you know, once or twice a year. They show us the most important love. So, you know, we appreciate them as a fan base, and we love everything, you know, they're about.
So that's Rockets James Harden with the sort of hat in hand apology. Contrast that to what South Park has done. The Chinese government removed all episodes of the Comedy Central cartoon South Park from the country's major digital platforms yesterday, and the move came after the cartoon poked fun at Chinese censorship. In South Park's most recent episode, Stan and his friends, the character Stan and his friends, scrapped their plans to perform as a rock band in China because of the limitations on free speech. Here's a clip from the show.
Yeah, but I can't sell my soul like this. I want to get away from that farm more than anything. But it's not worth living in a world where China controls my country's art.
什么?你竟然看不起我?
I don't care how many people you have. I've got something in me that just won't let me be a part of all this.
Yeah, whatever it is, I've got it too.
Yeah! I want to be proud of who we are, guys. And anybody who would betray their ideals just to make money in China isn't worth a lick of spit.
That's from South Park. Now, in a tongue-in-cheek statement, the creators of the cartoon offered this apology, quote, "Like the NBA, we welcome the Chinese censors into our homes and into our hearts. We too love money more than freedom and democracy," end quote. We've got a lot of comments and reactions coming in online here. Someone calling themselves Damn Salvation says, "I'm with South Park on this. No American or American company should play along with China. If, as a result, you can't sell your product in China, at least you don't have to worry about them stealing it and driving you out of business." Jeff Zilgit, let me turn back to you on that. Is there any discussion at all? I'm going to guess zero of the NBA, you know, taking a stronger stance here, even if it potentially costs them those billions of dollars that we were talking about in China.
No, if we're getting to the heart of your question, would the NBA consider withdrawing from the Chinese market? The answer is no, for a variety of reasons. Number one, the amount of money that can be made. And on the flip side of that, don't forget, these Chinese companies, whether it's Tencent or CCTV, some of the sports apparel companies that have deals with NBA players such as Li Ning, Peak, Anta, they make money off the NBA as well. So it is just not a one-sided flow of cash. If you are spending lots of money to have a sponsorship with the NBA. You were also making lots of money. So is that, there's that part of it. So I don't think the NBA is going to withdraw from China. My guess is that, again, Adam Silver acknowledged, and we talked about earlier, the situation isn't going to blow over today or tomorrow. But with the passing of time, some of this will ease. And just quickly on James Harden's comment, you know, I don't think the PR message was quite established from the NBA on down to its teams at that point. But what James Harden was also saying while standing next to Russell Westbrook is they do business in China as well. And so a certain degree, he was looking at his bottom line. LeBron James, Steph Curry, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, they do off-season trips to China. And part of it is certainly goodwill, being an ambassador. But the other part of it is promoting the apparel that their shoe company sells and profiting from that.
Well, let's go to Megan, who's calling from Union, Nebraska. Megan, you're on the air.
Hi, I just think that this really demonstrates the limits of soft power. And when I was coming up, that was what was stressed, was that if we could get enough American culture and sports and get them introduced into China, that would somehow change hearts and minds. And I can say from experience, I lived and worked in China for 7 years, including starting a high school basketball team, a girls' high school basketball team, that they were a lot more receptive to my ideas when I was working with them one-on-one in those kinds of situations. And I just think it's like a very big missed opportunity for an organization that has a lot of power and a lot of money to take a stand and say, hey, that's his right to say that, and we're not going to back down from that, and you can take it or leave it. And as another speaker said, you know, if you don't like it, we'll take it somewhere else. But I think what this really shows is how much power the Chinese government, and not the Chinese people, because we're talking about the Chinese government, we're not talking about the Chinese people, really has over some of our most powerful cultural institutions. And I just think that's remarkable.
Right. Megan, thank you so much for your call. Ray Zhang, do you want to respond to what Megan said?
Sure. So definitely China has been eager to adapt American business, both in terms of capital and in terms of business administrative strategies, but consistently the politics within China has trended towards restricting speech. And again, this is not something that domestic entities are exempt from. To give you an example, this year China forbade any talent, directors, anybody in the Chinese film industry to attend the Golden Horse Awards, which is a prestigious awards show that's held annually in Taiwan. This came at a time of tense cross-strait relations as Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen bought arms from the U.S. There was one director who really wanted to try to defy the ban and attend anyways. She basically got dogpiled on social media until she reversed course.
Wow. Well, so what Megan was talking about in addition about the limits of soft power, Ray, I'm wondering what you think about that, because the presumption, at least the Western presumption for decades, was through, as Megan said, through economic integration, through the opening of the Chinese market, that political openness would follow. But now it seems like a folly to have thought of that in looking here at 2019, because as you were saying, the Chinese government's position has not changed on critical things, even as we've seen this almost unimaginable economic transformation.
Right. And I would say that this is actually a line of thinking that has dovetailed with a question that a lot of China analysts are grappling with. Has U.S. engagement with China failed to achieve some of the political reforms that maybe American analysts have hoped to have seen at this point? But at this point, it's worth reflecting that even during the 70s and 80s in Deng Xiaoping's China was eager to adapt certain strategies to open up its economy. But at the same time, preserving its political legacy and preserving the political safety of the Chinese Communist Party is something that's consistently not changed the whole time.
Jeff Zilgit, there's something else that our caller Megan said that I wanted to get your take on. I mean, she was talking about the cultural power of basketball. in China. I mean, we started the show by you telling us how many Chinese people regularly play basketball and that she sees the NBA as missing an opportunity here. What do you think about that?
I don't know if they have. I think it goes back to also what the caller was saying is that the Chinese government has so much power in the situation, and you're not going to see lots of dissent from the Chinese people on this issue, no matter how much they love basketball. And so to the NBA's point, that they've helped refurbish and build basketball courts. They had NBA Cares activities set up this week with schools and the teams to make visits and do some on-court drills that were canceled. And so the NBA, over the course of 30-plus years, has tried to do that and make the inroads to the actual people. But that is also part and parcel with maybe hoping that they sign up for streaming games and buy jerseys. And so they've done their job there. I just don't know how much they can do when the caller is also talking about we all acknowledge the power of the Chinese government in this situation.
Hmm. Well, we have been focusing on the NBA, obviously, but as we've noted, many different sectors, businesses and a lot of big industries have made compromises in order to do business in China. Here's another example. The Marvel superhero story about Doctor Strange, it features a Tibetan character called the Ancient One. But when adapting the comic book series to the big screen, Marvel completely changed that character to a Celtic woman played by Tilda Swinton. And in a 2016 interview with the pop culture outlet Double Toasted, screenwriter C. Robert Cargill explained why Marvel made the change.
The Ancient One was a racist stereotype. Who comes from a region of the world that is in very weird political place. You know, he originates from Tibet. So if you acknowledge that Tibet is a place and that he's Tibetan, you risk alienating 1 billion people who think that that's and risk the Chinese government going, hey, you know, one of the biggest film watching countries in the world, we're not going to show your movie because you decided to get political.
That's screenwriter C. Robert Cargill, who talking about changes that Marvel made to Doctor Strange. Let's go to Paul, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I call in to express, I try to echo the concern of the previous caller. Let me specify, actually, you know, the business is not only controlled by Chinese government, but by Chinese Communist Party. So probably many people in this country do not know that in every single business, you know, Chinese Communist Party send a group. So the power of the group leaders actually is higher than the chairperson. Uh-huh. So we can picture that many Chinese governments or many Chinese companies also are listed in this country. And think about what's the goal of the company. It's to maximize shareholders' wealth.
Right.
So you can see it's a betrayal of shareholders' wealth. And also,
Paul, I'm so sorry to jump in on you here, but there's just something that I have to do. I have to say, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Paul, thank you so much for your call. Paul, they're talking about the Communist Party and the power of the Communist Party in China. Ray Zhang, I wanted to turn back to you here for a moment because I wonder, does what happened to the NBA, should it give almost all foreign businesses pause? And that are they going to have to now start combing through the social media accounts of all of their employees to be sure that no one's saying anything that could potentially get them in trouble with China?
Well, in the last couple of days I've been following this, I've already seen some companies try to do this. For example, ESPN allegedly forbade its on-air talent to discuss the politics of this situation too much. ESPN, which is owned by Disney, has, I believe, a physical Disneyland park in Shanghai. And, of course, Disney owns so many IPs that rely on Chinese movie revenue, Marvel, Star Wars, the list goes on and on. So I mean, ESPN has had a track record of self-censoring on politics, especially by on-air talent. But I think this is something to definitely watch for in the medium to long term, because mostly the business strategies aren't being made in real time, but there are going to be issues in the longer term. Just to give an example, Hong Kong had an airline called Cathay Pacific. So they had a couple of employees participate in the Hong Kong protests. Initially, the company seemed to stand by those employees, but as China and Communist Party-related business and cultural entities increased pressure on the airline, eventually there were firings of protest-supporting employees and more restrictive speech spaces.
Huh. Well, Jeff Zilgit, you've said a couple of times this hour that Adam Silver is well-suited to try to navigate these very rough waters right now. I mean, you talked about how as NBA commissioner, he sort of handled the NBA pulling the All-Star game out of North Carolina. But is this on an entirely sort of different level here?
I believe it is. I mean, really, when you start getting into it, you are talking about foreign diplomacy and U.S. foreign policy and being involved with it. And while the NBA is a huge company that generates billions of dollars, I don't think that they, you know, maybe they felt that there could be some kind of issue down the road, but I'm not necessarily sure that they felt they would be quite in the spotlight like this. And it is a challenge for the commissioner. It is a challenge for any CEO of any company, as we're hearing the stories that come out. And so he's trying to navigate it as best as possible. I don't think it's easy. It's an unenviable position. And Meghna, I just want to point out briefly, I know other callers have talked about the idea of moving elsewhere into other countries. When you are a global company, you are going to encounter nations that don't align with you politically, socially, value-wise, even democracy. And as the NBA moves deeper into India, and as it moves deeper into the continent of Africa, I'm not going to be surprised if similar issues come up again.
I can imagine someone putting out a tweet about Kashmir and getting the Indian government in a in a huff about that. But Jeff Zilgit, NBA reporter for USA Today Sports, it has been great to have you. Thank you so very much.
No, thank you, Meghna.
And Ray Zhang, I have one last question for you here. If the Chinese government is so very powerful and now globally influential here, how far can they take this? I mean, what if someone puts out a tweet just simply mentioning the Uyghurs? I mean, could that potentially get a global multinational company in trouble?
Well, China's government has put a lot of resources into what it's called public discourse. So honestly, the potential is really up to stakeholders within the Chinese government and Communist Party.
Well, Ray Zhang, Program Associate at the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson Center. Her research focuses on U.S.-China business and cultural relations. Ray, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.